Greetings, fellow witches, wizards, warlocks, and everything in between. You're listening to All Things Contested Realm, a podcast where we discuss all the things having to do with Sorcery Contested Realm, the trading card game. As always, I'm your host, Kevin Rodriguez, also known online and around the discords as Kevmo, and this is episode 16. Now, I am very excited for this episode because for this episode, I had the privilege, pleasure, and honor to sit down with the great and ever-talented Drew Tucker. Now, Drew Tucker is a very fun guy. It was very fun to talk to him. And as you all might know, Drew Tucker is an original Magic the Gathering artist who was brought on board for the Sorcery Contested Realm project. So for episode 16, we're going to discuss with Drew Tucker a little bit about his life, his career, his involvement with various card games and various projects, as well as his involvement and introduction into the world of sorcery. And last but not least, Drew Tucker is expected to be attending at the Spring Sorcery Social event coming up here in Baltimore in June, very soon. So we're going to talk to Drew about what we can expect from his attendance there, what he's going to be putting on for us. So with all of that, we'll be getting into that interview shortly. But before we get into the interview, as always, we're going to start off the podcast with the news and highlights section of the podcast. We have quite a bit going on in the world of sorcery and the world of the podcast. So quite a bit to share for the news and highlights section. So without further ado, let's just go ahead and jump into it. So just like we always do, we're going to start it off with the world of the podcast. So since this episode is going to be kind of touching on the Spring Sorcery Social event, I would like to announce that I will officially be attending the Spring Sorcery Social event as well there in Baltimore. I'm very excited for it. I finally got talked into it. I finally managed to make it happen and lock things down. So I will be there. If you haven't noticed by now, the official page was updated to reflect this as well. If you look down and scroll to the bottom where it talks about the guests and mentions which guests are going to be there, you'll see a photo of me down there, as well as what I'm going to be involved with. So I will be there to help judge, as well as help to host some of the Learn to Play events there for newcomers and those who are coming into the event hoping to learn how to play. So I'll be teaching some people how to play, I'll be helping judging, and I'll be helping with whatever I can there too. I'm sure there will be some other events that I might be able to help out with or lend a hand. So you'll see me around. I'll definitely be there. So if you see me there, go ahead and come say hi. I love meeting listeners. I love meeting people who are part of the Discord community, anybody who's supporting the podcast. So yeah, excited about that. It's coming up soon here in June. And on that note, I also want to add that the podcast is going to do a fun giveaway contest soon for some really cool prizes that are going to be exclusive to those who are able to make it to the Sorcery Spring Social event. So at this event, the organizers were able to commission private pieces of art from a few different artists that are going to be attending there. And three specific pieces were made into these really cool custom Death Door tokens that are going to be handed out to those who buy tickets there. Now, normally, one of the three will be handed out to each person who purchases a ticket. However, I was gifted with the opportunity to possibly be giving away one of each of these three tokens in the podcast Discord community. So I will be releasing some details on that probably in the next episode, but just keep in mind that the contest is going to have a lot to do with this episode with Drew Tucker. In fact, I might be doing some questions having to do with Drew Tucker's interview as potentially ways of getting entries into this contest. So pay attention to this episode, but it's going to be really cool. I can't wait to give these away. If you haven't seen them already, I will post something on the podcast Instagram page, and I did post an image of these in the podcast Discord community if you want to check those out. So very excited for that giveaway. Stay tuned for that one. Last but not least for the podcast, I am sort of working on hoping to start up a Patreon account and a possible YouTube channel for the podcast as well. So still working on some details on that. I want to make sure that when I launch the Patreon account for those who want to support the podcast, that I have something cool to offer them. So stay tuned for that one. As far as the YouTube channel, it's mostly just going to be me uploading audio on there with probably the logo as the background image, just for now, so that there's another outlet for getting that out there for people who prefer YouTube as the way to listen to podcast episodes. But also, that might be a way for me to do some Patreon exclusive stuff, possibly even some one-on-one interviews with people on camera, just a way of adding some extra stuff out there for people. So not sure yet exactly what I'm going to do with it. I don't want to do too much video stuff, obviously, because that's why I chose to do a podcast, but it's still might be kind of fun to be able to offer some stuff. So stay tuned for that one. I'm still working on that, and I will be releasing some further details as that kind of comes together a little bit more here in the future. All right, but that is pretty much it for the world of the podcast. Now we're going to move on to the world of sorcery. So we have a handful of things to discuss in the world of sorcery. So let's go ahead and start off with one of the more relevant ones here, since we're on the topic of the Spring Sorcery Social event. So it was just recently announced that the organizers who are putting together the Spring Sorcery Social event have officially opened up the ability to purchase entries into the Courtesan Cup tournament. Now, prior to this, the only way to get a seat at the Courtesan Cup tournament was to win top eight at one of the qualifiers that's been popping up around the United States lately within the last handful of months. And by getting in the top eight, you qualify for one of the seats at the tournament in Baltimore. So this is big news because some people were torn on this. Some of them were a little disappointed that you can now buy a seat into the event. However, there are many others who are happy about this because for those who weren't able to travel and make it to one of these qualifying events, it's a fun opportunity to be able to try to take part in this. And it seems like the organizers did not anticipate on this being such a big hit, this event that's coming up and all these people trying to come here. So they are opening it up to try to get a handful of more people involved in this tournament, and they might have had some entrants drop, and so they're just trying to fill in some spots for this. Either way, it sounds like a really cool opportunity for some people. In fact, I myself did not qualify at one of these qualifiers because it was a little hard for me to get out there to these qualifier events, but because I'm going to the event, I also decided to go ahead and try my hand at taking part in the Courtesan Cup tournament itself. So I myself am one of those people that went ahead and bought a ticket for that. I figured I'll give it my all, and if I don't go very far, then that just means more time to do learn to play events and help judge the other events that are there. If you haven't already purchased a ticket and you are interested in competing in the Courtesan Cup tournament, I will go ahead and link the Spring Sorcery Social event page at the bottom of the show notes, and you can go ahead and follow that link to purchase your ticket or any other tickets for the other events if you just want to go there and not specifically participate in the Courtesan Cup tournament. There are a handful of other things that you can participate in there, so go ahead and check that out. And on top of that, I would like to announce that the podcast received our own public discount code for that. So if you are going onto that page and you do want to look into purchasing an event ticket or even some merchandise from the event, you can go on there and in the coupon box, go ahead and put in the coupon code ALLTHINGS10, that's ALLTHINGS10, and you get $10 off any of your purchases. So to save $10 on your purchases, whether that's an entry ticket into something or merchandise, go ahead and put in the code ALLTHINGS10, and you'll save a little bit of money. All right, so while we're on the topic of events that are coming up soon, we have another fun, exciting event to talk about. There is a new big tournament event that's popping up over there in Europe. Askenrask is a sealed event tournament that is taking part in Aachen, Germany, and it is going to be on June 1st, and it is being co-hosted by our friends Sophie and Jens over there at Cardboard Guide, as well as Jürgen from Nerd and Proud of It. So it's going to be really, really cool to see how that works out because we don't have too many events popping up in Europe. So this is very exciting to see more events pop up like this and for these events to be hosted by some of our familiar faces in the community. So very exciting if you're over there in Europe, more specifically in the Germany area. Go ahead and check that out. Like I said, that's Aachen, Germany, June 1st. Giant sealed event, Askenrask. If you want more details on that, I'll go ahead and post a link to that in the show notes. But you can also reach out to our friends over at Cardboard Guide or Jürgen from Nerd and Proud of It for more details on that one if you're in the area. So really cool to see, and I'm excited about that one. They planned on all kinds of cool things happening over there, some giveaways, possibly even some guest artists. So sad I won't be able to join that one. It's quite a bit away from me, but it's really cool to see stuff like that going on. All right, and while we're on the topic of Europe, it was recently announced that there was going to be a very limited reprint of Beta. I believe it was in the previous episode, and this limited reprint is going to be hitting certain parts of Europe and Australia and Asia, and it is mostly going to be to fill in some of the holes where product was not really properly allocated in the early beta shipments. A lot of those regions were not allocated very big numbers, and because of this, they had a huge shortage on the product available to players there. Now, a lot of us thought that this reprint was going to be available a little bit closer to the launch of Arthurian Legends. However, it seems that it's been confirmed that this limited reprint of Beta is already hitting certain parts of Asia and Europe. And with this reprint, we've noticed some slight changes to the cards themselves in this Beta run. So it has been confirmed by some sources who have already received these cards that the card stock itself looks a little bit different. The saturation is a little bit different than most of the Beta products that's already out there. We did see some slight variances with the saturation and colors in the beta that's already out there. However, this recent print run has some even more extreme variances with some of the saturation and colors that we see on a handful of cards. Not only this, but in more exciting news, it seems that the beta and Blizzard misprint foils were fixed in this latest print run. So most of you guys are aware, but for those who aren't, in the beta print run, the file for the foil Blizzard and Blink was mixed up, and every single instance of the foil Blizzard and Blink in the beta set had a misprint in which the name of Blink was mixed up with Blizzard and Blizzard was mixed up with Blink. So it had the name Blizzard with the image of Blink and the card text of Blink and vice versa. So it was confirmed by some people who are already receiving that reprint product in those regions that they have opened up boxes that have a fixed version of these cards. And that is very exciting, but also a little bit confusing because we were not expecting the same beta product in a reprint to have these fixed issues in the same set. So now we're going to see a little bit of variance with that because those are going to be sought after, especially because this is a very limited reprint just in those regions specifically. And this is the only instance that we see so far in beta where we can actually have a proper legal fixed version of that foil for each of those cards. So right now, they're already going for a little bit of a premium because only a handful have been opened so far. We're hoping that we see this drop a little bit and they become a little bit more available for people, but it does seem that because this is a very limited region-specific reprint, that those cards themselves might be fetching a little bit of a premium over even the error ones, because not only is it another instance of that card and it's different, but people who want that fixed version to be able to legally play in their deck and don't want to cash out for the alpha foil versions definitely want to get their hands on those. So we're going to see how that goes. Not sure how the market on those is going to be. Not sure what the pull rate is going to be, but it is definitely interesting that we're not only seeing these fixed printing errors in this newest print, but we're also seeing a little bit of a difference in the card stock, as well as a little bit more of that variance with the colors and saturation. Eric's Curiosa has not been very public about anything to do with this limited print run and these changes that we're seeing in it so far. So it's all speculation, but it has been confirmed that these boxes are legitimate. The dust codes have been verified and confirmed, and these changes have been confirmed by people who have been opening those already. So definitely very interesting, to say the least. All right, so while we're on the topic of the market, something else interesting has popped up recently. It was brought to our attention that the first instance of a counterfeit sorcery card being sold on TCG Player has actually finally happened. It seems that somebody was trying to sell a Alpha Philosopher's Stone on TCG Player, and when the buyer received the card, it was very much obvious that it was a fake. There were a lot of telltale signs, including just obvious to the naked eye blurriness. The ink was raised. The card stock was not normal card stock. So a lot of telltale signs. It's very unfortunate to see that this is already becoming an issue and we're not even two official sets in yet. But luckily, like I said, this was not a very strong attempt at a counterfeit card. It was very obvious to the person who received the card. But it is still very unfortunate to see that there are going to be scammers out there trying to take advantage of people. So just keep in mind when you're buying from someone, make sure you know the telltale signs of how to tell a counterfeit from a real one. Make sure you have yourself tools in order to tell the difference, such as a jeweler's loupe or microscope, so that you can actually look in closely and see the rosette patterns and the colorations and variances on the print and stuff like that. So fortunately, this was a very obvious one, but hopefully we do not see this becoming an issue later. And if you have any questions at all about the legitimacy of cards, there are a lot of us in the official sorcery communities that will be more than happy to help you verify these things. All right, and we have a few more announcements for the World of Sorcery. So first off, we got an official confirmation by Simon himself via the Discord server that the Dust Store is literally days away from going live. They're just putting the final touches on it. And by the time this episode airs, if it hasn't gone live already, then it's literally within a day or two away, hopefully. So that's very exciting. They said that they're going to be doing a huge public announcement about that before it actually goes live and just giving us a heads up on what rewards are going to be available immediately, the prices of each one, the availability of each one, some details about the store and all that. So we've discussed the Dust Store a few times already on the podcast. I'm not going to go into too much detail for that, but it's just exciting to see that this Dust Store is finally going to be a thing. We've been waiting quite a while for our dust to be able to be used for something. I believe it was a year ago that the Dust Store was teased and announced that it was going to be a thing. So 1 year later, and it's finally going to go live, and we're super excited about that. So make sure that whatever dust you have, whatever dust codes are on your boxes, cash those in, get those credited to your accounts so that you're ready to go. And I'm very much excited to get my hands on a Pudge Butcher promo, as well as that beautiful Color Out of Space alternate art promo as well. So those two are the ones that I'm really trying to get my hands on. So hopefully those are affordable with the amount of dust that I have. All right, so while we're talking about alternate art, the next topic that we're going to discuss has something to do with the most recent drop of the Sorcery Beta Kit number 2 from Rudy over there from Alpha Investments. Now, there are a few things to talk about here regarding Rudy. So let's just start off with the first one regarding the alternate art for his new promo that came with his Sorcery bundle. Now, his new bundle, the newest bundle that he had, Sorcery Beta Bundle number 2, was once again exclusively only available for his Patreon members. And this bundle was around $700. He did kind of adjust that a little bit depending on who was buying. So the first responders and those buying with crypto paid a slightly different price. I guess he learned from the first bundle not to have the same consistent pricing, because last time that price released a little bit early. So it looks like he switched it up this time to help prevent some fraudulence there. The thing with this bundle was, like I said, it was about $700. It came with this promo, as well as 3 boxes of beta, a pre-con kit, and an exclusive 2-player Pillar of Zyros playmat. Really, really beautiful playmat. So that was really cool of him to include that in the second bundle. The big part of this bundle, though, however, was the promo. Now, this promo was an alternate art of the Amazon Warriors, and the artwork was by Boris Vallejo. And it is the first foil promo that we see that actually has full art on the back. So this was kind of a big deal, very cool to see. And once again, these promos came pre-graded. There's no way to get one without it being graded. However, the grading process had improved from the first bundle, and we see the lowest graded ones being about 8.5 to 9, and the highest being 9.5. But the biggest talking point on this is the promo itself. Now, I'm not exactly sure how the art from these promos gets approved, whether Rudy has any hand in that at all, or whether that comes straight from Eric's Curiosa themselves. My speculation is that Rudy does not really have much of a say in the artwork that is used, nor the card that is going to be used for the promo, but it seems like the artwork itself is something that comes from higher up, something that comes straight from Eric's Curiosa themselves, would be my speculation on this. Now, I'm going to discuss something here that's a little bit worrisome to me, and I'm going to try my best to stay neutral in this topic because I don't want to go either way on this discussion. I have my personal feelings, others have their own personal feelings, so I'm going to stay very neutral in this. I just want to discuss what happened and give some facts out there for the listeners. But it seems that this artwork that was used for this promo sparked quite a little bit of controversy amongst the community members, and it unfortunately affected the Discord community in quite a big way that day that it was announced. Now, the original Amazon Warriors card has artwork by Elvira Shakarova, and it depicts a handful of Amazon Warriors who are wearing armor, and they're suited up in their armor with their weapons, and it looks like they're preparing for battle. The new artwork used for this promo, included in the Rudy bundle, is once again by Boris Vallejo, and it depicts 5 Amazon Warrior women, and they are posing with a large lion, very scantily clad in these super tiny armor bikinis with weapons, and they look kind of posed like mannequins a little bit. Now, this is classic to how a lot of this fantasy art was depicted back in the day, and there are those who like this style of art, but as seen by the community reaction, there are also a lot of those who felt that this artwork was not very appropriate to the image of sorcery in the game. So we're going to discuss that just really briefly, and like I said, I'm just putting facts out there on what happened. So once again, like I said, once this artwork was announced and it was shown publicly, there was a little bit of a tear in the community that we saw on Discord. This artwork sparked a lot of heated discussion between people, and we saw quite a few people that were defending this artwork, saying that it's just art. At the same time, on the other end of the spectrum, there were a handful of people that were trying to say that this artwork was not a positive way to depict women. They were arguing that this artwork was a little bit demeaning to women, and that this artwork is an outdated form of depicting women in a powerful warrior role, as it's not really showing them going into battle or doing anything powerful. It's just displaying them as half-naked warrior women. So that was basically the argument that was going on and taking place. And unfortunately, we saw a lot of heated words get exchanged. Some people had to be blocked. Some people had to have their comments deleted by moderators. It was very much a big thing that happened in the community. And unfortunately, it created a little bit of a tear in the community that day. Artwork can make a big impact on the community and can be a factor for dividing the community a certain way. And one of the biggest parts of sorcery is the community and how strong of a community we have built. Everybody comes together to play this game together. And it's just very unfortunate to see this tear happen in the community and the community itself kind of hurt from this. And I think that Eryx Curiosa needs to see the impact that art can have on the players, the collectors, and the community as a whole. And whether you feel one way about this topic or the other, obviously there was an impact by this art, and it was not a very positive impact for the community. And I think going forward, Eryx Curiosa needs to keep in mind the artwork that they are using for these cards, and those involved in these promos and promotional products need to also be aware of this artwork that's going out with their names on it or that's helping them promoting in some way. Now, again, I'm not sure how much Rudy had to do with this or how much Eryx Curiosa had to do on this, but either way, somebody had to make the call on what artwork was used, and whether or not you feel this artwork was appropriate or not appropriate, the last thing Eryx Curiosa wants to do is create issues with the players buying this product. We do not want the collectors to lose faith. So unfortunately, you know, this happened. It's in the past now. We're trying to put it behind us. We're trying to learn from this and grow and bring that positivity back. Not sure how things are going to go in the future regarding promos and different types of art, but I very much just think that those in charge at Eryx Curiosa need to definitely run this through a test audience of some sort or have more eyes on it at the office or something to just make sure that any art that they put out there is not going to have, I mean, obviously you can't make everybody happy. There's always going to be some people that think this or that on something, but this was such a big thing that happened that it was more than just a small group of people that, you know, felt a little this way or that way about it. So that's all I want to say on that one. You could try to ask around for more details, but I'm not going to share any more on that. That's something that's in the past, and I think it's just at this point, we just want to move forward. You can choose which art you want to use if you are not comfortable with one art or the other. Use the art that you do support, and don't judge those for using the art that they choose to support, as long as nobody is out there trying to purposefully hurt one another. That's all that matters. We're all together in this game because we love the game and we love the community, and we're just out here to have fun. So just keep that in mind moving forward. Try to stay positive and be kind to one another in the future, all right? All right, so while we're talking about Rudy, the last couple things I want to add about this is that his playmats from the first Rudy bundle, a lot of you guys remember that the first bundle that he had issues with the playmats being delivered on time. It seems that Rudy did not receive the allocation of playmats in a timely manner, so he unfortunately was not able to include the two-player Battlefield playmat in his first bundle, and that created a little bit of controversy with his buyers. But he did try to supplement in a Alpha Investments playmat just so that he was able to include a playmat for those people who bought that bundle. But on a good note, those playmats are finally being delivered. I personally received mine around the same time I received the second bundle, and a lot of other people, it seems like most people are at this point receiving that playmat from the first bundle. So he did make good on his word. Eryx Curiosa did send him an allocation of those playmats so that he can ship those out to everybody who bought that first bundle. So it's good to see that those are finally being delivered. Secondly, it seems that the second Rudy promo bundle, it seems that after the initial buying wave happened, he ended up having either a handful of cancellations or it perhaps got undersold from what he had expected. Either way, they didn't immediately sell out like the first bundle. He did end up having a handful that he was going to be selling in a second wave. Now, interestingly enough, this second wave happened pretty much right after the first wave happened. And while his first wave of that beta bundle number 2 was priced at the $700 price point, his second round was bumped up to $899. So a little bit of an interesting thing there. Again, I'm not really going to comment either way about it. If you bought the product, it's for you. If you didn't, then it's just not something you're interested in. But the second wave, he did bump up to match a little bit closer to the market price of some of these products that were included in the kit. Either way, all of that second bundle sold out. And he did announce that he will be doing a third bundle when Arthurian Legends is live and released. So not sure what the promo is going to be for that. Not sure what the bundle is going to include or what the price point will be. And once again, Arthurian Legends is scheduled to launch in the beginning of quarter four So we're all speculating that's about October-ish. All right, and last but not least, while we're talking about Arthurian legends, the last announcement that we have for the World of Sorcery is regarding Team Covenant's pre-orders for Arthurian legends. Team Covenant recently announced their allotment for the early pre-orders that come with an Arthurian Legends promo exclusive to Team Covenant pre-orders are officially out. You cannot pre-order any more bundles. However, they did say that they might be reopening the ability to pre-order Arthurian Legends product closer to the launch date. However, these will not be receiving the early exclusive promo, as that promo is supposed to be exclusive to the early pre-order buyers, just like the first one was with the beta product and that exclusive Lightning Bolt Team Covenant promo. So just keep an eye on Team Covenant's website, and if you're in the Discord community, make sure you join Team Covenant's Discord, because they will more than likely be announcing that in there. So they did say, however, that if you don't end up pre-ordering, they will be having boxes available at launch, and they will be released at MSRP just like their beta product was. And I'll be delivering any updates I see on that via the podcast, so stay tuned on that. All right, that is it. We had a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's just go into the interview with Drew Tucker. Like I said, I was very excited to have the opportunity to sit down with Drew and discuss a lot of fun, exciting things to do with this game and his art and his career and his life. We had a fun time chatting. So without further ado, here we go. Episode 16, interview with Drew Tucker himself. Enjoy. All right. So here we are with our very special guest. I am very honored and privileged to sit down with Mr. Drew Tucker himself. Still can't believe I'm getting this opportunity to sit down and chat with you, Drew. Very nice to meet you. Welcome, by the way. Welcome to your debut of All Things Contested Realm podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Kelvin. I'm doing pretty good.
We definitely started off before I hit record. We're chatting for quite a while here. You're definitely a fun guy to chat with. It was cool to just kind of chat about all kinds of different things here.
I know.
So for those who are not quite familiar with you, or for those who might be just barely getting into the trading card world, do you want to go ahead and, for listeners, just introduce yourself and tell us how your art career got started for you back in the day?
Yeah. Okay. So my name is Drew Tucker. I'm a fantasy and horror artist or illustrator. So I'm mostly known for the work I've done for Wizards of the Coast for Magic the Gathering. Right. I'm one of the early artists for that. And I guess the way I got started in it was... There's all sorts of weird, like, backstories.
Well, how did you first, before you even got into Magic, how did you just first get into art in general? Was that something you did in school, or?
Oh, man. I have a theory about it, actually. And just to say, like, my parents are always very supportive of me doing art. Mm-hmm. That's a weird one for, like, you know, everybody's parents are really happy that you're doing things, right? Like, That's what barons do. I always drew. I always made pictures. There's some story my mom says, and I'm sure it's like some of it's like, you know, a lie by time or whatever, you know, because we remember what we remember. But like, she'll tell me this story where they went out for groceries or something. I'm like 7 or 5. I'm a little kid. And, you know, in the 70s, that's okay, which it's okay back then. And, you know, she tells this story about like going out, you know, to do the shopping or whatever. And she left and I was drawing some feet or trying to draw feet. And then she came back and the room was just like littered with paper. And it's like 3 hours later and it's still like feet. So like, I would just occupy myself and like, but yeah, for the most part, I've just always drawn, right? Like that's just kind of what I've done. Mm-hmm. And probably, you know, I had no choice. I think I had no choice at it too, because like my name's Drew. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was gonna say when you said, "Oh, I've always kind of drew." I'm like, I hope you've always been Drew.
Yeah, always. I'm not an Andrew. I am a Drew.
So you've always just go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was gonna say, so you've always been artistically talented and interested in kind of sketching and. doing all this stuff since you were a kid, and obviously your parents probably supported you in that.
They totally did, and like, yeah, but that's also, you know, kind of funny too, because the, you know, the genres I like work in, right?
Mm-hmm. What got you interested in sticking with those genres? What about fantasy and horror?
I really like mythology.
Okay.
And to me, that's what like fantasy is, really. Mm-hmm. If I'm thinking about it, you know, it's mythology. And I've always really liked that. I like the stories that are in them. And then, you know, how, you know, it's pretty universal, you know, the stories themselves, right? Like, what do we have? Like maybe 7 stories total.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just, you know, change parameters here and there for anything.
Every culture kind of has their own
versions
of these same stories. And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that's like why, but I think there's like a kernel in there that might be, you know, some sort of truth or something out of there. But
okay.
Yeah, I always think it's funny because like when I was younger, I played like Dungeons and Dragons, right, in the 80s.
Oh, cool.
But I had to do it in kind of secret because, you know, I came from a fairly religious family.
Oh, interesting.
You know, which is cool. But like, so like on Wednesdays, I'd sneak out and I'd like play Dungeons and Dragons with my friends. And then like, so it's Wednesday and you'd have to go to like potluck supper and then like some church after that.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, you know, because it's like the 80s, you know, when it was church time, they'd make all the kids listen to records being played backwards for like Satan and stuff. Which is hilarious. But, you know, so like that was kind of my weird background. You know, and there was, so some fantasy was okay and some fantasy wasn't, but in my head, it's all stories. So I think, you know, like trying to understand my own upbringing,
mm-hmm.
you know, is why I like mythologies. How about that?
And horror kind of goes hand in hand with mythology too, because there's always a horror aspect of mythology,
right?
With these like scary creatures and scary figures in these historical.
I mean, that stuff's just cool though.
Yeah.
Like that stuff's always cool. But yeah. I think all of that like somehow goes together.
Hand in hand.
Know?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
So what pushed you to kind of follow in your art and pursue that as a passion that turned like what turned that from passion to an interest in doing that as like a career? Like when did it turn kind of more career for you?
Yeah, that's like I went to school to be a graphic designer because like after high school, you know, when you know, you're going off to college trying to figure out, I'm like, I didn't know like what to do, or, you know, I'm, you know, like your brain's barely developed. Right. Or at least my brain.
It's funny you say that. Cause I originally went to school for a graphic design career as well. And I just didn't really follow in that direction. And now I'm doing something completely unrelated, but it's cool knowing that you, I mean, back then you didn't have like the digital stuff that we have today.
No, when I started, right, like the year after, like in high school, at least we had the first Mac, that little like cube thing,
okay. Yeah,
you know, like the first version of Photoshop. And it was ridiculously simple.
Oh, cool.
Right. Like compared to like what we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And then like when I went into college for graphic design, I learned how to do like all hand type, all like we do color separations, mechanicals, and all these crazy things, you know. And then like the year after, or, you know, all right, here's the computer. So it just came out. And then like, you know, so I kind of learned right when it was coming, but like the faculty that was teaching it was from the 50s. So I got a whole lot of old school, like, you know, you're using Ruby Lith and stuff like that. And Letraforms and like, yeah, it was wonderful. But yeah, at the same time, like the computers came over. But I wasn't like, and I did a bunch of logo work, you know, because I was trying to follow that and like figure out. And eventually I stumbled into illustration, partially because I didn't like designers, kind of like the polish that they had. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so like the designers that I think about, and but I really like design, right? I like graphic design, and designers are good people too. like, say it like that. But where I was in Southern Illinois. So it was a lot of kids like from Chicago and stuff like that. And it's the 80s. And so it's that sort of like vibe. I could be less specific, couldn't I? But we're going to leave it there.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't like the, or at least the group of people I was around really reminded me of car salesmen.
Okay.
Which car salesmen, let's go with used car salesmen. Or at least, because like car salesmen, yeah. Even used car salesmen are good people and they're doing exactly what they got to do. Marketing sort of like, marketing sort of vibe, which I don't really have.
It's kind of that like doggy dog world competing sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm not really that guy.
I think Jeff Manges, with his interview with cardboard guy Sophie and Jens, also kind of shared that same. He had mentioned how he kind of had that same beginning where he didn't like the competitive aspect of the early, you know, early days of art and fantasy drawing, where you had to like feel like you're competing with each other kind of thing. So interesting take that you kind of shared that.
That is kind of interesting. That's something. Yeah, there was weird competitions, but I don't know, like.
So what was the connecting factor between your schooling and learning all this stuff? And when did you like finally take the step to having it be more of a job or a career for you? Like, what was that? What was your first step into that?
Oh, I think, good God. You know, like life's long, right? I never, like when I first went to college, I could have been a doctor. Maybe because I like went to college forever, man. Oh, mm-hmm. And because I didn't like necessarily like graphic design, and my father was a dean of, or he was a big math professor, and then later a dean these other schools, and so I kept on going to school, right? Because mm-hmm. You know, like art was kind of, you know, what I knew I could do really well. Or what I felt that I did really well, let's say that, because I can do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But graphic design, I didn't quite feel it, but I was doing like freelance logos and things like that, you know, when I got out of the first round. So,
okay.
Which was like 2 years. And then I did a lot of like fine art classes. And then, you know, it took me forever to get a bachelor's degree. And like when I got my bachelor's, which was up in Seattle at Cornish College of the Arts, is where like Wizards kind of like really starts. Mm-hmm. Like Jesper was going there. Everybody was going to school there, you know? And so I was in the right place at the right time. And I was in the illustration program because like my paintings weren't necessarily paintings. And I guess that's a fair argument to go like my illustrations aren't necessarily illustrations. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they're kind of paintings. So there's a funny line there, but that is all like what got me first working as an illustrator, because like Wizards of the Coast is my very first real official job, right?
Okay.
Oh, step back a long ways, because like when I was a little kid, one of the things I did, and I think I'm like, I must be like 10 to 11, because I'm still in elementary school, but I would make, like at Christmas time, I would make Christmas cards, and you'd go to church and you'd go around the neighborhood and you'd sell those and like gift tags and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, then I draw pictures for people on the playground for money. So I always kind of like made art for money, which is like interesting.
A little art hustler on the playground.
Right? Yeah. That's cool. There's side stories to that too. But you know, that's a different that's a different thing.
Well, that was going to be my next question was going to be, how did you get involved with Wizards of the Coast and Magic the Gathering? So you kind of gave us a great segue into that.
Yeah, I'm in Cornish, right? Like Cornish College of the Arts in Seattle. Awesome school. And I'm in a watercolor class. And Sandra Everingham is also in my watercolor class. She was like, oh, hey, Drew, you make like really cool stuff. It's weird. It's pretty cool. We're putting together a trading card game. Would you put together a portfolio and I'll bring it over to our art director, Jesper? And, you know, and that was that. So it was all, I was so in the right place at the right time. A lot of those guys knew each other because some of them grew up together, you know, like, and we all went to school. But like, I always feel like I was like some outside guy because I'm not from Seattle. I'm not from Washington. I grew up in the Midwest and then we moved there later on, you know, and that's where that all hits up.
But you became part of this like art group of people that.
Yeah. I very much became part of that group, which is really cool.
That's really, really cool. Yeah.
And yeah, I think I owe so much to like Jesper for like that. That was interesting as a first gig too, right? Because so much came out of just that. That he saw something in the kind of pictures I was making. You know, that's pretty big. Mm-hmm. That's huge because like I'm an illustrator, but I have my own like voice, right? Like I think that's fair to say.
Very unique style.
Yeah.
Of your own, yeah.
Which can be problematic. At the same time, if you're too far off like what everybody else does, that's hard, I think, sometimes for some art directors to work with or not work with, but like know what to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And probably, you know, like some of it's me too.
So what pushed you to take the step and be a part of that? Because that was, you know, back then trading card games.
Oh, because like how awesome is it that somebody wants your pictures? Like somebody wants you to make pictures, right? Like how stupid cool is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's my answer for that, right? Like,
because that was back when, you know, trading cards were not a thing. And so it was kind of a lot of people.
No, the whole thing, none of this was a thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. Nothing exists at this point. But it's real, except pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures always existed, right? Like, people always make stuff.
So you took a huge risk and just kind of leapt off the edge there and hoped that it went somewhere. You just kind of.
I don't know if it's fair calling it a risk, right? Because like, think about it, like you're in college
mm-hmm.
and somebody wants you to make pictures, right? Like what kind of risk is that? Like what else are you doing in college? What's your job? You know, and you know, it wasn't paying huge or anything, but like it's this opportunity to do the thing that you wanted to do, right?
So you were just excited that somebody wanted your work commissioned for something and they wanted you to be a part of something bigger than, you know.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, yeah, that's really cool. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a risk or, you know, if it's even like you're right to call it that because, yeah, it's just a really cool opportunity.
So did you play any Magic the Gathering back in the day? Were you a big?
No, it didn't exist back in the day.
Well, I mean, after the cards came out, did you?
Right? I had people try to teach me. I'm not very good at all.
Okay,
but it's fun. But I'm not like I've had some decks given to me, and that was like really cool and special. But yeah, I'm not very good. I have a limited amount of cards, right? Like I didn't collect a bunch of them, which you know, like. I should have, because I was getting like, you know, boxes and stuff like that. I have a bunch of boxes, right? So I bet I could like put something together, but ultimately I'm kind of a hermit.
Okay.
Yeah, like I'm not even kind of a hermit. I'm going to like, when we're done talking or like even after Baltimore, the thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to go home and I'm going to paint pictures.
There you go.
You know, and then like if I do something out, I'm gonna go hiking,
okay,
or I'm gonna go kayaking. You know, and that's like I do a a lot of everything that I do is like, I guess, is that...
It's like to yourself solo activity sort of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of it's alone time stuff.
Which is, you know, it's not a bad thing.
It's just the thing.
Yeah, so a lot of people underrate how fun it is to just kind of do your own thing sometimes. It's not always, you know, having to be a social thing. So
yeah, I mean, you know, before I did do a lot of other stuff, like, you know, prior, and mm-hmm. you know, most of my friends were musicians. Okay. So, you know, it's that sort of thing. But at the same time, I'm still just like hanging out making pictures for musicians at that point, right? So like
do you still play D&D from time to time? Are you a gamer at all these days?
No. I'll play video games every once in a while, but like I don't even play a lot of video games. I do a lot of painting.
Okay. Putting you on the spot real quick, what's your top favorite video games that you're playing these days?
Dude. My top favorite, I'll tell you my like number one top favorite video game ever.
Okay.
Is PS1's Tenchu.
Okay.
I love that one. I love the first one. I like that you can like make levels on it. I liked it, you know, it's the first introduction to the slow, or at least I believe it's the first introduction to the whole theory of like, you know, video games where you're essentially kind of like stalking things, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, that slow wait. I think Tenchu was like the first thing, but I love Tenchu. I thought that was great.
Okay.
I really like, and these are all going to be older games too, because I don't have like a newer system. I like Ghost of Tsushima. I think it's really cool.
Okay.
I like Red Dead.
Okay.
Is really cool. That's an older game too. I mean, it's been out forever, right?
Yeah. A little bit newer than some of the PS1 stuff, but it's been out for a while.
Yeah. In the God of War series, I like the last ones of that.
Okay.
But like, I haven't played anything like, you know, there you go. That's how recently I've played stuff. Okay. Like this is...
Still cool to hear that you're a gamer guy. I'm a big retro vintage gamer guy myself.
Yeah, I don't want to pretend it's retro.
PS1 is still pretty vintage, pretty retro, yeah.
Oh, PS1 is like ancient.
Yeah.
That's older than dirt. But I love that one because I associate that game and those things. See, I associate these games with playing games with my kids.
Uh-huh.
Right. Because I'm like, I'm 56. So I've done a lot of stuff at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like lives and things have gone through each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like some of the like Tenchu, I love Tenchu because like part of the reasons of what I was saying, but like the other parts is because I played that with my kid. Right. And we'd build like he'd build these stupid impossible levels that were the worst things in the world. But it was so much fun. So I have, you know, it's like, I have my own nostalgic moments for those.
Okay.
So, but like, you know, like,
safe to say that you probably don't play sorcery yourself these days.
No, but I have a couple of starter decks and I'm waiting for somebody to like, to show me how, but like, it'll probably end up like for me, like Magic where like, I'll play a couple times and then I'll go and hide in my hole.
Maybe I'll talk you into getting a game in over there at Baltimore.
Yeah, no, I would love to. Like, you know, like
that would be cool. Yeah,
because it's fun. Playing is fun. Yeah.
So we could talk all day about video game stuff. I'm sure I could go on a tangent with you.
Oh yeah. Sorry for like switching. If I switch subjects,
but to keep it on online here with where we're going here, how did you feel when Magic: The Gathering sought out more of your work for the Double Masters and some of the recent sets? Because you had some like order lists.
All right, I was really happy. What's horrible about that? Yeah, no, I was nothing but pleased. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was really, really excited because at the same time, at that point in time, I also stopped teaching. Because my kids were big, and now I could like, you know, like I could focus like 100% on illustration and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really nice opportunity, right, to do that. And they wanted me to do things, and you know, I had been talking back and forth with some of the art directors prior because I had been going to like shows in games and stuff, right?
Okay.
And that's really where you see each other. And, you know, and I had started like reworking a portfolio and everything. And then, you know, then all the Modern Masters things. And then they had called me back. And I really, you know, that was awesome. That's the first stuff I did, right? And I really enjoy doing it. I super enjoy doing like fantasy work.
It's rare to see some of the early artists for Magic the Gathering get called back later to do more work again in like the newer set. So I'm sure that was a big...
Right? Yeah, no, that is like really rare. That is a good note.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, how much of that is also due to nostalgia?
Mm-hmm.
I would think because, like, now you have, like, an older generation that grew up with, like, playing Magic, right? Like, when I go to some of these events. Oh, so, like, the first time that all of this, like... really drove home that like this was like very kind of like what I'm doing, like making these pictures is important to people. Mm-hmm. Or you know, I don't know if like important is the, I mean, that's a little like, that's a little overweighted, you know, or self
it resonates with people.
Yeah, it resonates with people. That when Magic first started, we went on these little tours to comic book stores that they were trying to entice into like getting the game and selling it there, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't have game stores aren't the same thing at this point either. That doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So we go along and like we're in, I think it was Cincinnati, and I signed some little kids like Dan Dan, right? Like, so it's been going for a little bit there because that's Arabian Nights.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom was there and like, so I signed it for him, and then like it's like 10 years later, or maybe a little longer, and I'm at another, you know, Magic Fest, and the same kid like comes up. Now I think his name was Ben, and he comes up, and he's got like facial hair and all that stuff, and he's like a young adult. He's not a little kid, but he brings the exact same card, right? Like, so he held that thing.
That's cool.
Through that amount of time, that amazes me that like what we've done, and you know, like Jeff, like you know, all the other artists too, like you know, what we're doing is like we're making like these connections and moments, and that's like pretty amazing too.
To know that you're like touching someone's heart in such ways and making something that's so important, these people. And
yeah. And like, honestly, I didn't see that like as a thing, or cause illustration's weird. Like people know who their favorite musician is, right? Like not everybody, like, you know, outside of these genres, right? Like mm-hmm. not everybody knows who your favorite, who was your favorite children's illustrator, or you know, like who made your favorite prints, or like any of that? Like that's, artists are usually, because it's a quieter thing. It's always there, right? Like you always have visuals. None of this exists,
mm-hmm.
but artists are for the most part in the background, and so you don't really know. I can remember realizing that like Picasso was still alive, or not. Well, he had just died, and that's why I figured out he was alive. That blew my freaking mind when I was younger, right? Like, because it was just stuff you'd see in books and museums.
Mm-hmm.
Or like Dolly, like, you know, which is all last century. So that's a long time ago by this point too. But like that blew my brain, because like artists aren't real in a way, right? Like,
yeah. You kind of connect, you see their art up front, but you never really make the connection of who made that art and
yeah.
you know, who their name is, and you're meeting them in person, and
yeah.
you kind of forget that they're this person themselves instead of like the stuff that they make. A lot of the time people just see them as what they make.
Right. Like, or even like what I always find interesting is like what they make is often a product of who they are as well. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you know, part of their, I think if they're making their own artwork, right, and everybody is,
mm-hmm.
like, but like yeah, everything speaks from a point of themselves, like even as an illustrator, because it's still you making the solutions, mm-hmm. right? And you putting down like what your visual idea is mm-hmm. That they're asking you for, you know, what you do and how you do it. But like, yeah, like that voice somewhere is a part of them. So it's all there, but it's not there. And it's not like, I was always jealous of my friends that were musicians because, you know, they're like, they're out there and they're singing and they're right freaking there. you know, and you know who did it, right? Like, you know exactly who's doing it.
Yeah. It's almost like an out of sight, out of mind thing where, you know, yeah. the artist is not up front with their work all the time like a musician is. So, exactly. you know, they just kind of float into the background of everything.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. That's whatever it is.
No, that's an interesting take. Yeah.
But I feel really lucky because, like, because of magic, people know my artwork, right? And like, because of going to these things, people know who I am. And mm-hmm. that's really weird. And really kind of special, but it's special.
Surreal?
It is surreal.
So how did you get your foot in the door with sorcery? How did you transition from magic into sorcery?
Oh, partially, I think magic's to blame.
naturally.
Right? Oh, well, no. I mean, because I owe a lot to that game. Mm-hmm. I owe a lot to, like, my work from that game. And in ways, sorcery is borrowing from those, like, early days of
OG magic.
In a way, like, and borrowing from its current nostalgia of it, too. You know, if I think about the old school communities, mm-hmm. You know, because they're wanting this more, you know, like when Magic first came out, it was an adult's game, you know, just like Dungeons and Dragons, right? It's not really like a kid's game, and it's all done by hand, and it was all new and inventing itself and creating itself in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. Right. And being one of the first artists to that, I think that was one of the things that Eric was looking for mm-hmm. is those early artists. We could pin it all the way back to, like, if I want to say people, I would say because of Matthew Place and Jack Stanton. And like, it's like a 7 degrees of separation, like, you know, Kevin Bacon. But, you know, and that got me to Eric, but, like, also because of my background with magic, being one of the early artists for it. Mm-hmm. I think all that. I don't know if I really answered the question.
Yeah, you did. Kind of. So he was reaching out to a lot of the early artists who did, like, Magic the Gathering.
Even this has been, like, it's been in the works. I'd have to go back to my file, but I want to, like, think, you know, like.
At least a few years ago, handful of years ago.
Oh, yeah. You know, I want to think it started rolling maybe, like, 2020, 2019, like, is when we first started working and, like, you know, starting to do images and things like that. So it's been a while.
So was your reaction to him reaching out to you similar to when you were reached out to for your magic work? Was it just one of those, like, yeah, you want my stuff? I have no problem being a part of this.
No, like, it's like I'm a little older at this point, right? Like, I've been mm-hmm. working for a while. But it was that, like, I really, really like people making things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because, like, you know, sorcery doesn't exist, right? And Eric was, you know, making this game and, like, really playing things out of what he was wanting to do. And, like, you know, I wanted to be a part of that. I find that really exciting and rewarding. It can be very rewarding, right? Like, mm-hmm. it can be amazingly rewarding. So I always, I like to, you know, part of it maybe is I like to work too. But no, a lot of it was, it's, you know, it's a new game and, you know, like they're kind of like harken back to some of the early things, but not really. I mean, it's not the same game at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I could say aesthetically, you know, I think, the early art is something that they're looking for, mm-hmm. you know, And especially, you know, traditional artwork. That's a huge thing to see. Not digital, not of course not AI.
Yeah, that's a big reason why a lot of players got into sorcery was because of this emphasis on art and this classic handmade art, and it's a throwback to early magic.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you just wanted to be part of something. You enjoy being part of something that's bigger than you, these projects that people put together. You love being a part of creating things.
I really do.
So are you pretty close to some of the other artists in sorcery? I know Jeff Mangas.
Some of them, like Jeff. Yeah. Jeff Mangas is a really good friend of mine.
Okay. He mentioned that you had helped him get into sorcery. You kind of referred him to Eric. You mentioned that.
Yes, I did. Well, Eric was looking, was looking for guys. And I think I honestly think I was one of the first, folks for magic and stuff to get on it, or one of the, first alpha artists or whatever. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. So, I had suggested, a couple of, got contacts for people. Cause yeah. And we all kind of help you. Like, I think people sometimes look out for each other, or at least I like to believe that's the case. Because you build relationships, right? And it's all that nonsense.
Yeah, Jeff put it in a very fun way. He said he feels like it's one of those instances of when the tide rises. Oh, I forgot what the saying was. When the tide rises, all ships rise with it, sort of thing. I forgot the saying. I'm butchering the saying.
Yeah, right. Like, I think, yeah. What a poetic bass.
So it's one of those, when one artist kind of gets an opportunity, they kind of look out for each other and try to help each other do big things together.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think that's really true in any generation. If you think about it, if you look back and if you put on your art history cap, like I have one, which is, I don't really have one. That's a loose joke. I think we all you try to bring the people along that you want with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So besides Jeff, are you close with any of the other artists that are in sorcery? I know I was interviewing Margaret Organ King over there at SorceryCon, and she's definitely a fan of yours.
Yeah, no, I know Margaret. I know Liz. I know Alan. It's like all the old school guys, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm getting to know, I guess I'm not actively pursuing, but I am getting to know the newer artists. I mean, I lurk on our own, when everybody's Lindsey Crumb's stuff will come up and, I'll look at people's stuff, but, I don't know them the same way. There's not 30 years of history. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, continue your thought there.
Oh no.
I was just going to say, are there any, artists in sorcery that you, that are some of your top favorites as far as whose art you connect most with? Do you have any favorite artists or art?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull them up right now so I can get the name right.
Okay.
What would be the smartest way to do this? Here we go. Because I was thinking we were coming into this. Mm-hmm.
I heard you clicking over there.
Yeah, so sorry.
No. Some of these names are hard to remember the exact.
And frankly, they're all freaking awesome. I hate them. It's really nice. It's really cool. They're younger artists and stuff coming into it. And that's amazing to me. While I'm trying to dig this cat up. I love this. This guy is my favorite guy too, but something interesting about, so I've been with magic and stuff for 30 years. Right. It wasn't until maybe 10 or 12 years ago that I first met Jesper or Jeff or Daryl Ritchie or Anthony or anybody that we first So it's so strange. I've worked with people for such a long time, and sometimes it's just by you know an art director from a phone call, because in the very beginning, emails barely existed, mm-hmm. right? So it's all so strange.
I'm sure it's really cool seeing these younger generations practicing this same traditional art that, you know.
It is. It's awesome. And like, yeah, there's some of these guys like, they kill me. They're awesome. I want to call attention to who I just think is great. And I would like in the purest cannibalistic way, I would love to eat his hands. power. Oh my God. I love this cat's artwork. And I'm scrolling through like all the cards at the moment. I'm not even like, it's not, how am I not like running into it? Yet? There's a lot of cards, man.
Do you remember what the card was? Maybe I.
Oh, it's, you know, it's the goat one. It's got a goat.
Oh, Assorted Animals. Is it that one with the.
Wouldn't it be nice if everything was alphabetical? I guess I could use a search engine. No, but I love Marta Molina's stuff. I'm so glad to see that she's been getting things. I remember first seeing her stuff when she was doing like altars on Facebook, and that's so cool. What's also funny is I'm scrolling through these, right? And I'm seeing all sorts of other stuff that I, you know, my brain wasn't clicking on. Like, this one's like Ian Miller's Warp Spasm. What the heck? That thing's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, kudos to you, Ian Miller. Ah, how dare he? Like, yeah, that's pretty freaking cool. So let's put Ian Miller on that, too.
Okay.
Oh, I like Francesca there, but this is not the cat that I'm like, I want to eat his hands, but I might want to eat Ian Miller's hands too. Not that you can eat people's hands. as a disclaimer, not that I do that anyhow, but it's just a compliment or a weird compliment, hopefully.
Are you thinking of possibly Vasily Ermolev? Vasily.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, let's go. Yeah, let's. I'm going to go to the.
He does the Bosk Troll. The Assorted Animals. He's often.
I think it's that's exactly who I think it is. But like, I want to be on the money, and that guy's pretty awesome too. What the hell? Yeah, and there's I like really like Andrea Modesti. His stuff's kind of fun, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want Vasily. Let's. Oh wait, here we go. Tony's stuff is cool. Like, let's see if it is. Yeah, it's exactly him. He does Bosk. I thought you were saying something else. I didn't think you were saying Bosk. I was hearing whatever like my ears wanted to hear, apparently. but yeah, I absolutely adore this guy's stuff. I hate them. They're so good. they're really awesome.
It's adding to the list of hands you want to eat, then.
Dude, yeah, no, there's a large list of hands apparently, but I love what he's putting down, man. Yeah,
it seems a common answer for a lot of the artists that are being interviewed lately. A lot of them are huge fans of Vasily just because he really brings out that like classic approach to, you know, hand painted art.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So let's turn the tables around on you. What are some of your favorite pieces that you've done? Obviously you've done a lot, so if you want to limit it to just
bunch. And I've done some that like haven't showed up, which so I don't know if I can talk about them, but I really like them. But like in the stuff that I've done for, you know, the next round of Legends coming out, I really like.
How many works did you get commissioned for in the upcoming set? Are you allowed to tell us?
There's so much overlap, it gets difficult. But I think maybe it's like 13 or 12. Maybe there was
four. Okay.
For the first one, I did like a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's like maybe four or five that didn't like make it in. And one or two of them I really like. The other ones, like, that's okay. You know, so there's a whole bunch in Arthurian Legends coming up that I'm really, really proud about.
Oh, you're making us all excited to see those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What about the current ones that are already?
Well, yeah, well, we should go about the ones that we can talk about, right? Like,
yeah.
And you know, that works too.
So I know a huge fan favorite is Pathfinder. A lot of people love
Pathfinder. I really like. I think I like found something there.
Mm-hmm. That's very popular.
That's weird to say it that way, but like, yeah, like, because I'm pretty much always trying to paint whatever I'm. I mean, I'm trying to paint my own stuff always. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying. I mean, I paint for the illustration. I kind of paint for myself, but I think there with Pathfinder, something hit like really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So
how do you feel about how successful that was? I mean, not only is it one of the strongest avatars to use in the game, so it's a very strong card, but it's connected with a lot of people, just the art itself. I mean, a lot of people were excited about your prints and all that stuff. How do you feel about the success?
That makes me like so happy. Like, I don't think I've ever had like that kind of appreciation on it, like anything that I've done before, right? Like, yeah, I really like that. And I really like that painting. And like, yeah, like that print run, that was like amazing. Mm-hmm. That was fun to do. I'm wanting to like make a metal card version with the die cut of the spell in it.
Oh my gosh!
Because I'm out of like proofs, and I couldn't paint that, but I think it'd be a really cool like limited thing to make. Just because I also think you know, a die cut you know, on a metal playing card would be cool.
Well, right? You let me know when those come out. I'll be first in line.
It's like one of those things. I'm like kind of working on it. I want to pass it on and make sure I'm like not doing anybody wrong.
Yeah.
But I really like Maddening Bell. I think is a really cool painting. I love Middle of Lane. I really like Nightmare. Oh, that one showed up. What? Weighted Net. I love Weighted Net. That one cracks me up. I think that one's so pretty because it's so pretty. It's you know, like it's got all those pretty colors and stuff. But the thing I really like about Weighted Net, and I don't know if you know which painting I'm talking about.
I'm not familiar with that one. I don't think that was one of the ones that showed up.
It's like, don't think it printed off in like Alpha or Beta, right? But I love the little boardwalk the people are on and the little kids playing ball by like this hanging dragon. I think it's funny. But I love that paint. Oh, well, it's in, if you're in Collector Art House, I know where it's coming out of. Like, ooh.
Okay.
I'm excited because it will show up. Oh, so exciting. I love that painting. Yeah, but it's on the Collector Art House, unconfirmed art.
Okay, let's see.
Yeah. I love that picture.
Let's see. I'm going to look it up myself, too, just so I have it in front of me.
Oh, there's another one that's like, yeah, actually, like, right, there's three in a row that, like, I think are stupid awesome. So, like, you run down, there's, like, three that are mine. Like, they're... Scroll down to the guy holding up his hand, and it's a stop.
Scrolling down.
It's called Spell Block, but I think it's really cool. And I think this is a moment where, like, painting-wise,
let me see,
the things started happening. Then the one to the left of it.
Oh, yes, Spell Block. So that made it onto – Spell Block made it onto a test card, like a playtest card, or a sample card. So that did make it on there.
So what about the one right to the left of it? I love that painting. I love that card.
Oh, yes. The knights kind of walking towards.
I forgot what it's called.
Yeah.
And then the one right to the right of it is Weighted Net. The
Weighted Net. I see that. Yeah. Oh, those are cool. I love the way you.
Yeah, I think those are great cards. But like if we think about what's actually up there.
I love the way you do your colors. You just have a very unique style, very colorful. Even the one with just a hand, the Spell Block. I mean, you did a great job at doing so much like red color, but also these differentiating different shades of red.
Red's hard to paint with, man. Like it's a weird one to paint with.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like Mad Dash. I think that was a really cool painting. I love Fae Changeling. 'Cause that's kind of like childhood for me. I was adopted, and they always say, like, you know, the family joke was, I'm not one of theirs, which is a weird joke to tell somebody that's adopted, but.
So if you had to pick one of your sorcery artworks to do, whether it made it onto a card or not, and this is just the existing stuff that you've done, nothing Arthurian Legends, what would be your top one that you had to, if you can choose one, whether it was like the most fun one to work on or you like how it turned out? Do you have one or even like a top two?
I could tell you what I dislike. I don't know if I have I have a top like 10 or something. It's really painful.
Okay.
Right. Like is like everyone does something like slightly different. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool about it. Like, I think Mad Dash is a really cool painting. Mm-hmm. Mirage is a really cool painting. And I think that one works as a mirage. You know, and I think you can feel the heat off that thing. And so I really enjoy that. I love Pathfinder. Oh, Pathfinder is a cool one. And you can find this the courtesan, right? Like Courtesan Tyus. Mm-hmm. I love that painting. That painting's awesome. And there's all sorts of stuff that we could talk about and I shouldn't say and like could say, you know, because it's an opinion, because like that's a weird one because it replaces a Franzetta piece, right? Like, so there's a conversation about different artworks and different styles, but I was so happy with, you know, because I was asked very specifically, don't use this composition. This is, you know, do Courtesan and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's really cool because I wanted a character that, like, could fight for herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, like, all the things where, like, if I think about, like, Egyptian Queen, that painting, I'm not really, the lady's, you know, enticing, sure, but, you know, she's not going to hurt you. It's her goon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over on the like right hand corner of the illustration or whatever, it's a bodyguard that's going to rough you up. But like in mine, like the courtesan's going to do it all. And I really wanted that. I wanted that kind of like, I wanted that. So I really liked that painting. And also like colors and stuff are like crazy and off the chart. And I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah, you wanted the emphasis to be more on her rather than the rest of the scene that was going on in the Rosetta one.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
So what about with magic? Do you have a favorite magic piece that you did for Magic the Gathering? I know Dandan's a big one of yours.
Dandan's a huge one. I really like Dandan. Like some of the newer ones, I really like Brainstone. I thought that was a great painting. Mm-hmm. I just think it's cool and I want to make a little like key fob that like its eyes will glow. That's a brainstone.
I did love your work on that one.
Oh my God. I mean, I made that thing out of clay before I painted it.
That's so cool. I was a big fan of your Arcane Signet from the Double Masters, I think it was, your full border.
Oh yeah. No, I love that painting. That was a good one.
Uh-huh.
I really like that one. But they just sent me, they recently sent me art cards of it. And it's just stupid sick to see the whole painting. I really like that one. I really like that one. I liked Cavern of Souls, I think it's really cool.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
Forbidden Orchard. Tom Jacob was the art director for that stuff. And he like used the mess out of it. He used me really well, I think.
What about your like the early magic stuff? Because
the early stuff, dude, I couldn't paint worth a lick. Oh, I didn't know what I was doing. yeah. Well, I was 20, you know, or 26. I was like really young.
Uh-huh.
Like, but yeah, like out of the early stuff, there is early magic stuff I like that I think I did really good. And I'm going to open up a folder so I can go like this, because there's been a whole lot of artwork done and I lose stuff, man. It sounds bad, but yeah, I've painted a lot of paintings for, you know, like, you know, not just for sorcery and not just for magic, but like everybody, like for White Wolf and like all this other stuff. Oh, I love Glimpse the Unthinkable, but that's not where we're at. We're going, without opening stuff. I really liked, Flare. I like Holy Light. I thought Ashes to Ashes was cool. Vertigo, I think, is a really well-handled painting. Mm-hmm. And I really like that painting. I think Dandan, of course, like I can't like...
It's a classic.
It is. It's a total classic. I love that painting.
We have one of the guys in the community. His name is Dan. He's an avid collector of art. He loves collecting frogs and anything with his name in it. So he has pages of that Dandan card.
Good on him. He should have more, and Dan should contact me for more Dandan related merchandise.
There you go.
That would be great.
I'll let him know about that one.
Yeah, somebody will hate him for it. But that's okay. Yeah, no, I liked a lot of, like, there's actually a lot of early stuff. I loved Gravebind. I thought that was cool. I really liked Murk Dwellers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Goblin Caves. And what's weird is a lot of these are, you know, very related, like Goblin Caves and like People of the Woods is in from a spot in Tennessee where I used to play. And Goblin Caves is when I was young, my family is from like the Hannibal, Missouri area, and we bounced back and forth between Illinois and Missouri. But where my grandfather lived is Ellisville, which was like a little off of St. Louis. And up there was this sandstone bluff of caves that we'd play in, like when they told us, you know, go play and like, mm-hmm. you know, don't
be home by dinner time.
Yeah. you know, and I play in those. And so like those are kind of those sandstone bluff caves. So there's weird moments in these like illustrations that are like parts, like especially like starting off. Yeah.
Inspired by your childhood or stuff that was familiar to you at that time.
Yeah. Even like sorcery, right? Wicker Mannequin is in like college years and stuff. And a little past that, my friend had property that was in the woods and, you know, like had all this like clearing. And so like every Halloween we'd have like, or he'd have a big like bonfire party and we'd make this huge wicker mannequin. Mm-hmm. And you know, you stuff it with leaves and then you like put it over the bonfire and like, you know, all the leaves and ash would bulge into the sky.
Made your own little burning man.
Yeah. It was a good time.
That's cool.
You know, so a lot of stuff there is kind of comes back too.
Yeah, your wicker mannequin was one of my favorite pieces as far as like that horror vibe, because I love horror work and I love the ideas of these like the mannequin or like these scarecrows coming to life. And it actually inspired me during Halloween. I did a Halloween special where I wrote three short stories.
Oh, right.
And
on.
Each story was based on a specific card. Oh, cool. One of them was Screaming Skull. One of them was Recurring Specter. And then the last one was Wicker Mannequin. And so I wrote a short story and narrated it myself with different voices inspired by your card. And that was probably one of my favorite ones to write. So I'll have to send you that one.
Will you send me that? Yeah, I really want to see that. Like,
I'll send that to you. It's a fun one to listen to.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I'll send you that one. But I loved that one.
Yeah, I so want to like see that.
So have you done work for any other projects outside of trading card stuff lately?
Right. I've been doing some like beer label stuff, which is kind of really entertaining.
Okay.
Because like for independent breweries and things, that's like, that's really interesting because they just let you go. And like, that's a lot of fun.
Are you allowed to mention what those breweries are or their product at all?
Oh, yeah, no, probably not at the moment, but like as soon as stuff like one, and this one's like almost like really traditional and weird for me, is like this water, like for a water thing. Mm-hmm. That one's weird because I'm having to behave very like, you know, very cleanly in the most Drewish way I can,
uh-huh.
Which is pretty funny. But yeah, no, I can't. I've got like a movie poster, like for this independent film thing coming up too, which is really kind of fun and exciting and outside of my usual genre of like horror and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also, you know, working on like my own work. And then, you know, like there's a token set I'm working on, and there's stuff for sorcery I'm working on. And then I'm working on some of my own stories and things like that. So, you know, there's a hodgepodge of everything going on at once. And like, it's like, yeah. So I think I dodged your question.
No, you're my question was just, are you working on some other stuff? And yeah, beer labels.
Oh, tons. Yeah. Like, and I'm building a French workbench, a woodworking workbench.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, like when I have things due, that's what I run off and I cut mortises and tenons and things like that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's how I procrastinate, is do some other stuff. Just do more stuff.
Uh-huh. While we're talking about social projects and all that, one of the big things that I wanted to emphasize here and kind of talk about, we'll kind of segue into this. Let's discuss the upcoming Sorcery Spring Social event.
Yeah, right.
I know that you're going to be attending there with a handful of other artists. Do you want to tell listeners and kind of share with us how you're going to be involved and what you're going to be kind of bringing there for us?
Oh, gosh. I believe I'm doing some talks. I know that. Like, I think I might be painting there. I have to actually, like, look at the, like, whole itinerary thing because it hasn't gotten close to that. My brain's going like, okay, you got to know. Which I should have known 100%, but right, like that's the way the world goes sometimes. But I'm doing some talks. I think one of them I'm sitting with Jeff Mingus.
Okay,
which that should be cool. Let me go and like, because yeah, I have an itinerary, right? Which is like pretty awesome. I don't usually have an itinerary. Usually I go and I show and I like hawk prints, right? And stuff like that.
It's time they're putting you to work.
Oh yeah. No, I like, for some of the old school groups, I have, we've done like paint alongs and things, and that's a lot of fun.
That's cool.
This one, you know, isn't going to be a paint along, but that's a good time, right? It's kind of like having a, kind of like wine and paint.
Yeah. That would be so like, cool to have a paint along thing with you in a studio or something. That'd be cool.
That would be a lot of fun. I enjoy doing that, but
especially if you add some beer or wine into that situation.
Sure, well, no, you add beer and wine into anything, and now everything gets looser, right? Yeah. Oh snap! Okay, here. I'm doing live art, maybe art and story time. I love that. That sounds like art and beer, frankly.
Now, is this art that you're doing your own projects, or is this sorcery related? Is this like they're having you?
Well, I don't know, right? Like maybe it'll be like a shoot for all. Like we could ask what somebody wants.
Okay.
Because it's always fun just to do stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, if I was being smart, I would say it would be sorcery related because, like you know, like doing the bell tower. Might be a nice one to do or belfry, right? Because it would probably, you know, or you know, doing an altar or something on or one of the backs of the APs. Though I like the idea of painting a painting, as opposed to painting a tiny painting,
especially if it's like alternate art of something that we're already familiar with. You know, seeing it done live.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to do I would love to do the belfry again, doing like a watercolor or an acrylic or a gouache, do that live and then auction that off would be a lot of fun.
That would be cool.
But yeah. I am scheduled for live art with Drew. And it says maybe art and story time on Saturday, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay.
That almost doesn't seem like enough time to do anything. That'll be fun though. That'll be a quickie. I'm gonna try to do like an offsite painting. That'll be fun.
Okay. So you got some talks going. You got some live painting.
Yeah, and then you know I got a question and answer with Jeff Mingus on Sunday from 11:45 to 12:30, or 1:15 to 2 p.m. It's an either or situation, you know. And I think there, Jeff and I will sit together and ask each other questions and answer them. Oh, I don't think that's how that's going to go. but it would be really funny if we just questioned each other.
Well, that sounds like a fun time. I mean, and it sounds like you and Jeff getting together would just be such a fun thing to join.
No, he's an awesome guy. Mm-hmm. He's a really good guy. I have like a massive load of respect for him.
Of course, you're going to be there, you know, signing cards and signing prints as well.
Yes, I'll be signing cards. I'll be selling prints.
Are you going to be bringing any other merch with you? Do you still have artist proof?
Yeah, I'm going to a show in Portland next week, and I'm going to bring these t-shirts I made for that are like Pathfinder that I think are really cool, and they're on my like web store. But I'm going to bring some of those. I'm working on like a t-shirt for Men of Ling because I think that's a cool picture. And I think I could do it like a really cool like t-shirt off of that, and like Nightmare would be Nightmare would be a really fun one to do.
Okay. Are you bringing prints? Do you still have any of your...
Oh, I have. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you still have any of your embellished prints or any of your artist proofs?
I still have artist proofs. I don't have any of the embellished prints left, but I have tons of prints, right? But they're not limited like the embellished prints were.
Okay.
And they're not embellished, right? They're just straight up prints. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not to take away from the embellished prints.
I'm sure those will still be very popular there. There's a lot of people excited to get their hands, even just on a regular, normal, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see because this is really the first thing I've done for sorcery, like the first one I've gone to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm really interested to see what happens. And my brain is like, yeah, you just, you know, you do it the same way you do, you know, when I go to a Magic Con or an old school like event, right? Like, I'm sure I'm doing pretty much the same thing, mm-hmm. right?
Are you going to be attempting to play at all while you're there? I know we kind of briefly.
If I can get somebody to sit down with me, but for the most part, I'll be at my booth and like where Ronald puts me. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of it is talking to players and talking to people. I mean, that's what I really enjoy doing too. Mm-hmm. Like I like having
conversations.
Conversations, yes.
I know. Just an example here. I mean, we've talked for at least half an hour past what this interview is going to go, just because it's so fun.
Have we? Yeah, no, I freaking love it. This is what counts, right? Like in my head, this is what counts. Uh-huh. Is, you know, like people meeting each other and coming together and like
making connections and yeah.
That's huge. I think that's huge. And that's what I'm here for. And so like anything that I do away from that takes away from that, mm-hmm. which is weird. But I have a couple of starter packs that they gave me, and I'd love, like, if you want to like show me how to play, I'd love to learn how to play.
I would love to teach you how to play. I would love to get a one-on-one with you and play some sorcery with you.
I want to try to like, because I think I can finally do this like with things that I've made. Like I couldn't with magic, right? Because like everything, uh-huh. you could barely, like until the Forgetful Fish game came about, like you couldn't do it. Uh-huh. But you know, like I didn't have enough cards to build a deck out of, right? But like being Forgetful Fish, you know, I have 10 Day and Dance. I don't have everything else, but like, uh-huh. yeah, it's just a funny thing. But I think I could build, you know, like I'd love to use Pathfinder. I think that one's really cool. I want to use Common Sense. I like that card, right? I like that painting. I think that one's funny.
Uh-huh. Your Common Sense is a big part of the metagame right now. Yeah. Just it's such an important card in the game right now.
Well, it's Common Sense itself, you know, ought to be an important thing. Yeah. It should make a whole big difference if you've got some.
Are you bringing anything to the spring social event that will be Arthurian Legends related? Are you allowed?
Oh, right.
Did you get the okay on previewing anything or bringing anything?
You know what? I haven't asked. I really should. There's a couple of pieces I've like. What he's already let me like. like Agravain's already been like seen, right? Like that was I was allowed to show that in October. I'll ask because I'd love to. Like I'd love to take some of the original pieces. I still have some left from the alpha stuff that I can bring. You know, and like I'll probably bring some of the sketches if people want to see them. You know, and some things are available and some things are kind of not.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to bring some, you'll bring some originals there for people to possibly
play. Yeah, I would like to. I think it would be a nice thing to do. I don't know, like if I'm right, but it could be nice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I of course was going to bring prints. I mean, that almost, you know, like goes without saying, right? Like,
are there any original pieces that you're holding on to that you're saving for yourself?
Oh, Witch's Cauldron is one of them. I really like that painting. That was a weird one. Mm-hmm. I got to think about it because it's kind of like there are some that I want. And I've sold a good deal of my paintings too already. Mm-hmm. Not everything, of course, but I gotta go look at the list of what I want to hold on to Middle Bling. I love Middle Bling.
That's a cool one.
Yeah, that one's really awesome. Mad Dash, I think I'd like to hold on to that one. Yeah, Cauldron. I've got Cave Trolls too. I think I'm holding on to those guys.
Mm-hmm. But you said you might bring with you.
Bring them to show, right? Like, to like, hey, look at my paintings. Yeah. You know, but I also have other ones with me that I could like, you know, that are still available that I could bring too.
Which ones did you say you might bring for possible sale there, the originals?
Oh, wait, let's do this. It's the only way to know.
Just to get the listeners who are going there excited to.
Oh, right? Like, yeah, no, I got you. I got to, like, hit my Dropbox folder because that's where I've been, like, I keep my catalog. Oh, so I have a catalog, and if anybody's interested in pieces, they can contact me, and I'll shoot you, like, you know, like, here's my catalog.
Yeah, send me all your links and stuff. I'm gonna post it in the show notes for this episode. Yeah.
I actually have to update this thing too, which that's rough, because that'll tell me what I can also bring. I need to ask. Honestly, I need to ask if I can like show some of the
upcoming
stuff. I find this interesting because like Eric really works with a spoiler man. And I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I always think that like, you know, you can drive up interest and all that stuff by, you know, by sharing out. And I love seeing what's coming out by other people. And
yeah, I hope they gave you the okay to bring some possible Arthurian Legends art just so you can kind of show us.
I need to, like, I so super need to ask.
Because they did with Lindsay Crummett, she was just at the championship in the Australian New Zealand championship, and she actually got to preview a piece of her art, and then they showed the card itself. They previewed the card that the art was used
for. Yeah, the mermaid, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that thing is sick. That's an awesome paint.
So I was hoping that they would allow you guys to each bring a piece, but that would be like four or five, you know, spoilers at the same event. So I don't know. I don't know how big they are on that.
Like I need to ask. I cannot say for sure. Mm-hmm. And even like some of the ones that I think I could have brought might be for later. So I don't know.
Okay.
Shoot, man.
Is there anything that you're bringing for sure that you want to put emphasis on for listeners to get excited about, or is there anything you want to kind of showcase?
Oh, God, that'd be the smartest. That would be so smart, right? Oh yeah. That would be the smartest thing in the world. I don't know. I want to bring a lot of prints. I'll bring prints and proofs of my like award-winning personality, right? Like, yeah, that's a load.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot right there. No, but like I will be bringing some art, and I will ask about like I'll ask if I can bring anything from Arthurian Legends. But like what's really funny is I was scrolling through, I was like, oh my gosh, I've sold a good deal of these paintings, and it's almost down to like the ones that I have. left are the ones that, like, I think you really got to, like, offer me more than I want
mm-hmm.
to get them out of my hands.
I'm sure there'll be people there.
So that's kind of weird. That's a weird thing to say out loud.
Uh-huh.
That's nice. But very weird. And that's also why I really hope they want to show some Arthurian legend stuff. Jeez.
So is there anything that you're allowed to tell us for this interview here regarding Arthurian legends, or is it pretty locked down?
I'm going to go with it's pretty locked down. It's my general like mode of doing stuff anyhow is like I'll make a painting and then I'm going to forget about that painting. I'm going to make another painting because for the most part, a lot of places you just can't say jack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't talk about things. And so it's best just to keep on going.
I guess it's already lucky that we got the, like an estimated number out of you.
Yeah. I mean that, I could actually count my file load, but like, I'm not gonna, I think it was pretty close to what it is actually,
mm-hmm.
Or the number, but there's a couple that I think might trickle over from, you know, that I did earlier. So, you know, like part of it is I don't necessarily really know. Even when I was doing stuff for like magic, I didn't really know. When I first did Flare, I was doing the card Wrath of God. Like on that painting is written Wrath of God. You know, so that was the assignment. And then later on it changes. And sometimes things keep with it and sometimes things don't make it. And so, like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which that sounds so curmudgeon-y to say it like that too, but I know.
So there's a possibility we might see some unused art from Alpha Beta.
There's possibility, and yeah, there's that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like though, I mean, I speak with everybody. It's not like, you know, like until like Eric doesn't tell us like. You know, necessarily like all the, you know, we don't know the ins and outs, right? Like we're,
yeah.
I don't want to say we're just hired guns, but we're hired guns. Right? We've got to do.
I was actually going to ask, that's kind of leading into another question I had. I was going to ask you just how much information do you get from Eric as far as, you know, when you're making these cards, what's the process of, you know, the information that he gives you and what you're actually putting into your piece.
That's awesome.
Do you know what these cards, like mechanics, do you know what the theme is going to be? Like, what do you
know? Oh, you know what the theme's going to be. You don't know the mechanics, right? You don't know how it's going to play. I had no idea, like, Common Sense was going to be like, its mechanics were going to be so awesome, right? Like
a tutoring card.
Yeah, we don't know those. Like, for the most part, we'll get an assignment, you know, and this goes for everybody. And you'll get like an art description. Sometimes you get more information, sometimes you get less, right? Depending on it. And then, you know, and then you go from there. Sometimes like for magic, they tell you the colors for the beginning, you know, and this is interesting because there's a similarity going on. And I think it's really interesting in the beginning of working with like, wizards or magic, right? Like we were starting off doing stuff, and because it didn't have a history, right?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have anything like that. Everything was like Jesper would call you up on the phone, which is pretty funny that you're talking to people on the phone. And you know, so like, and he'd read us off like a list of names and go choose the ones you think are cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, and that was about that. Like, and you might get like, oh, this is a dark card or this is green. And I'm trying to pull up I forgot about that painting. That one's cool. Like, see if I'm trying to pull up an old email. Here's the angler. See if I have the description. Boy. Yeah. Like I'm having trouble digging back. You know, sometimes there's a little bit more information involved.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, or it's describing the vibe. But a lot of what we're getting, Eric's letting us just kind of like run with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool. And that's what I was like, oh, there's, in ways, this is reminiscent of early magic, because you'll get like this, the briefest, like if they have an idea, you know, you'll get the briefest description of like abandoned belfry up on a hill, right? Mm-hmm. And then like do what you do. And that's such a delight. That's so great to work on stuff like that. In a lot of ways, that's what Eric's given us. He'll give us a brief description. I mean, I'm reading one right here that I can't read.
Is there a piece that you have that you've had to go back and do multiple renditions of it and fix little things? Because some artists
there's things like sometimes you have to fix stuff. Yeah, that's okay. That's part of your job, right? Like that's part of like what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Is there a specific piece that you had to do multiple renditions of or little minor adjustments?
No, not at all. No.
So your stuff was first piece was the go-to most of your stuff?
Pretend-ish. If I think about Primordial Spring, I gave them like a boatload of different like watercolor color studies. And those would be probably pretty cool to like frame and like bring. I like those a lot. Mm-hmm. But like there are all sorts of different viewpoints of that scene. And so it was picking out and trying to feel which one is that. But like when you get an assignment, you know, you'll get your assignment. We'll have the brief description to it. And then, yeah, and you don't know how it plays or like what kind of powers it has. You just have the description, you know, like a island monster, right? Like there's your description. Mm-hmm. And you get to like add to it. But so like on the illustrator side, you go through sketches, a lot of sketches for yourself. Like Island Leviathan is a good one. Like on my catalog for like the alpha stuff. My first sketch, instead of that tiny boat, right? Like that tiny, like big boat up that the text box is right on top of. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was like a dinghy and people frantically paddling away. And the island monster was so much bigger, you know, and that like, oh no, you know, you scale back a little bit. You know, and I'll get stuff like that sometimes. And so, you know, and then you got to go and redo your drawing and your thoughts. But like you work through a lot of that stuff ahead of time, and then you give like a drawing. Sometimes you give color studies, depending on your art director, and like also depending on you. Some of these, like I know what's going to happen, mm-hmm. you know. But like I've been trying to like supply like color studies. You know, and that also is helping us work out, you know, the problems in the painting before it ever comes, if that makes sense. But it also gives Eric or whoever your client is the idea of like, oh, this is what it's going to kind of look like. This is mm-hmm. you know, the colors that he wants to work with. You know, and then you get to go from there. There was one for Arthurian that like, he was like, oh, I don't know if like, you know, I don't know. I was like, look, let me do this because it's going to look really cool. Like, get why you can't see it, but I want to do it. Like, and if it sucks, I'll do the whole painting over again and we, you know, don't even worry about it. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, the job is always. But, and in that one, he let me do what I wanted to do, right? Like, he gave me, like, a whole lot of trust in there. And that was really cool. And I didn't have to go back and do it.
Nice. So he liked the version that you produced?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, sometimes early on in my career, I would paint two paintings where I would paint one was like, exactly, this is what you want. And like one where like, this is what I think it ought to be. And sometimes I still do that, but I haven't done that with sorcery at all. Like mm-hmm. a lot of it's been like, this is what I want to do. You know, but yeah, like sometimes like Cortison, he was like, I want you to pull back this from the scene a little bit. So, you know, I reworked the image before, you know, so it was pulled back. So usually that stuff is caught like on your drawing stage.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's interesting to hear about the Island Leviathan, how you said it was a different scene with like people fleeing from it and stuff like that. And then you kind of had to change it.
Yeah. I thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm. I still think it's really cool, but I like Island Leviathan like it is. I think the scale of them becomes different with the sea boats
Will you possibly be bringing some of these like alternate sketches with you to the social event?
That's what I was thinking would be cool to do. Like, I think that's what's going to happen, and I'll bring some of my sketches because, like, yeah, it's. I always think the process is interesting.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of the studies that I've kept, you know, because yeah, I think the process of it all is really neat to see, you know, like what the possibilities or what the thoughts were while you're going through it.
A lot of sorcery collectors and players love seeing the changes that were made during the process of making these works of art. And so it's cool to see different art for different cards that didn't make the cut or maybe had to be adjusted, and you kind of see those alternate versions a little bit. And so that would be definitely something that a lot of people would probably love seeing if you ended up doing something like that.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say my other question was you had mentioned Primordial Spring earlier, and I know that you just had a artist series of the playmats for Primordial Spring.
That was so nice, those guys, to like send us those mats. I think, you know, it's a test run for them too, about like selling, you know, official mat products. But that was like, that was the kindest thing ever. And then an amazing response from the fans and everything. Overwhelming. Almost like, yeah. So it's pretty, it was amazingly successful.
Are you going to be bringing any of those?
I'll have some. I have a few. I saved a few. I held a few back from, you know, from that initial sell, so I could have some with me.
Is there, without telling us too many details, is there any cards in Arthurian Legends that you would be excited to see on a playmat? Kind of that same artist playmat?
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
That's all I got.
Do they have any plans for any more artist series playmats in the future?
I think they do. I think us four were like, you know, the test on it. And I need to talk to Simon on stuff because I want to offer some playmats too, but I don't want to overstep like on Sorcery's product line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I got to figure out like how I can do things without. Yeah, I don't want to like ruin anybody's deal. I think everybody should like, you know, succeed together. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So yeah. But there's totally some that I want to see for there's totally some in Arthurian that I'd love to see.
Nice.
That I think would make really cool ones. Think about like three or four paintings of like this. And I can't say anything about them. So there you go.
Well, I would love to come back post Arthurian Legends launch, and I would love to do a follow-up interview with you.
Oh yeah, please.
Down the road to just discuss some of this stuff. And you know, it seems like you're very, very excited about some of the art that's coming out, and
yeah,
you know, everyone's excited about this set.
I think every piece has gotten better and better and better, and finding its ground and footage in like, you know, Sorcery's like world too. Which, and this is unrelated, but like something I think so cool about this game, and like when you show me, you know, how to play, maybe what I'm about to say is the wrongest thing ever, but that's okay. Something I find interesting is because like how it doesn't like, I don't know if this is going to be able to like set itself in stone like Magic did, right? Because like it didn't exist. And then it sort of built itself, and then it created its own storyline and history and lore and like all this land. And maybe the lands, you know, like make a story for themselves. But like the way Sorcery is played, or from my point of view, it reminds me of like those pick your own journey or pick your own ending books you read when you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're like, oh, if I choose this response, I go to page 54. And this is how, you know, which enables the game to change all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let alone, you know, the dynamics, how one card plays against the other. But that's interesting to me because something so fluid like that, you know, will it make its own stories or, you know, like solidify the case or something, you know what I mean?
Will it kind of find its own foundation? Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's one of those, will it hold on its own and make its own solid foundation to stand up on its own and be its own thing, being this unique and kind of a breakaway from what we're used to?
Yeah.
Which is, it's interesting that you talked about the story aspect, because that's what a lot of players really like about this game, is it seems like, because every game is different that you play, and you're playing against all these different decks and stuff like that, you're essentially telling this story
right
from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And, that's something that really appeals to the players. And
I think that's so cool. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch Sorcery as it grows and develops. How does it retain this, you know, and how does it retain it? Because everything does make stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And stories are important. You know, so will it be like stories about related moments? And I don't know. It's like really weird because it is very organic at the same time, the play of it. And I find that really exciting. I think that's cool. I think that's really neat.
They didn't really, like, Magic has its own lore.
Right.
And they have their own books and they have their own, like, this is the history of these characters. Whereas Sorcery, they don't have their own lore. They're leaving it up to the fans and the players to kind of come up with their own backstories and their own, you know, so that's definitely a huge difference and something very interesting.
Yeah, I can remember reading on like somebody's thread when it was coming out, they were like trying to make a story for themselves about like where something came from and like couldn't do it. And it was bothering them for a second, you know, but yeah. And I found, because and of course, just like I did, I compared it to Magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like where Magic is locked into its story now, in the beginning it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never like, it's not the same kind of fluid play. It's not the same game. You know, I'm really curious the stories that this is going to make for itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so organic and dependent on the players to make their own stories.
Well, we're coming up to the end here. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do have a couple more questions here to close it out. While we're on the topic of like stories and lore, I know nothing is going to be official. Obviously, like we just said, there's no official lore or stories for Sorcery. But as far as your inspiration for Pathfinder, did you have kind of this like backstory in mind for inspiring you to do Pathfinder, or was it just kind of?
Oh, God. I wish I had a good lie.
or even just an idea of a concept that came to you that inspired you.
I had an idea of a concept, right? Like, I used to play in the woods a whole lot when I was a kid, like an unhealthy amount. I might get grounded, I'd escape out my window. And then I'd go play for like the day and hope that my mom didn't come to the door and see like, you know, tell me I could be ungrounded. Right. Like I spent tons of times in the woods for like years and years. And like as I got older and when I was doing this, I was watching, a heck load of the TV show Vikings too.
Okay.
So like my first sketches are really influenced by that show. Or no, it wasn't even Vikings. It was there's another one that the Norwegians came out with. What's the name of it? It might as well be Vikings, but it was pretty funny. It was more of a like almost, you know, it was like I forgot the name of it. But I was watching that sort of stuff for a while, but like the thing that came to it really, like, and I think what's kind of interesting about it is this is like one of the first ones where I really start like trying to put my like real intentionally put my name on the paintings, because usually I try not to.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to sign things. I like that the paintings, you know, I think they, you know, when somebody looks at my paintings, they know I did it. And it should be about the painting, right? Like, but like the spell itself is my initials forwards and backwards over and over. My middle initial is A, my last initial is T, my first, you know, so it's D-A-T,
mm-hmm.
T-A-T, D-A-T, over and over and over. So that, you know, is like one of the first ones, because somebody was complaining because I didn't sign paintings so often. I'll sign them on the back,
mm-hmm.
but I won't like, you know, sometimes there's a DT carved somewhere in there, but for the most part, one of the, like, you know, painting central. But, you know, I really purposefully tried to put that in there. It's kind of in that way in the courtesan as well. On the, there's a guy on the left-hand side on his robe. The hem is also my initials. So I just tried to start putting stuff in the decorative way.
Like hide it in there.
Yeah. I was trying to think of different ways that I've painted the woods in the past. And Jeff actually has this painting. I think I did it for like White Wolf. Maybe it was for Rage. I don't know which game. Like one of the early card games in the 90s. Because we did there was a lot of them out there that, you know, came and went. But he has this one painting of mine. And... you know, that was making me think of how I wanted to deal with the trees and stuff. But, like, using those colors, right, has a lot of energy like a spell. So it all kind of, like, builds into itself that way.
Okay.
Yeah. I so didn't give you a real answer at all.
Well, no, it's still great to hear your creative process and kind of where your headspace was. And it's interesting to hear that you... grew up in the woods, because that's again, we have a lot of similarities in childhood a little bit, because when I grew up, I was raised for a small chapter of my life up in like a plot of land in the woods, and I would just same thing. My mom would just say, go off and you know where the edges of the land are, you know where the mines are, like don't go in the mines, you know where the best places snakes and stuff was, you know what spiders to not touch, you know what snakes to not touch, just be back by dinner time, and you know by the time she would whistle and call me, I'd come back. And so a lot of, you know, again, why I'm working in the middle of the national park is because my love for the woods.
You said that to me about Yosemite. Like one of the things I wanted to do, and like, probably if I didn't like go into like, if I didn't like, you know, like just stay in the arts and stuff, I really wanted to be a forest ranger.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I could have seen you being a really cool forest ranger. It's never too late, Drew. You come to UCLA.
No, it's not. I'd like it to be a little too late. Like, I love painting. But, like, I think if I was a forest ranger, I'd be painting a bunch. But,
I would love to, if you ended up coming to Yosemite, I would love to give you a tour. And
if I was still in Washington, I'd just drive down. I have a strange lifestyle. If I'm over that way again, I will give you a holler, because, I love Yosemite. Yosemite's like stupid amazing. Mountains on top of mountains. Like, it's crazy. Like, just the granite walls and everything.
It's a beautiful place. It's an epicenter of a lot of just energy here.
It is an amazing place.
But all right, to close it out and to keep things keep things online here, so we talked about your presence at the upcoming Sorcery Spring Social event, which is going to be in June, and you're, like you said, you have a talk there that you're going to do. You're going to do a Q&A with Jeff. You're going to be there doing a live painting kind of event, possibly playing some a little bit with people kind of want to play with you. Maybe if I'm lucky, I'll get a teach and play in there with you.
Yeah, so if I got time, I would totally like to do that.
And you're going to be bringing, like you said, all kinds of really cool merchandise with you and products with you, some of your t-shirts and clothing, your own little private projects that you're doing, as well as some sorcery products, your mats and your original art pieces, prints and APs and stuff like that. So very excited to see you there. Do you have any more events planned for the remaining of the year?
I do.
I know you said you're a hermit, but just trying to see where else people might be able to find you.
I get out all the time. I'm a hermit and I get out all the time. It's like pretty funny. I think every month I've got something going on.
Okay.
Which is like next week I'm doing a comic and toys convention in Portland, Maine. And that's going to be interesting. That's the first time I've ever done anything like that. Like,
okay.
Yeah, because usually it's related to, like, you know, wizards or sorcery or something like very direct that I've been working on. So that'll be interesting. And I figure I'm going to bring the same sort of stuff, right? Like, it's going to be because, you know, that's what I do. And then in May, I'm going to be up in Seattle, I believe, at an old school event. And then at that point, I need to look at my refrigerator downstairs to tell you what it tells me.
And then doing. June is the spring social event.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. See? Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
May, June is Baltimore. July, question mark, I'm not sure. September, I'm doing something down in New York. I think there's a potential of doing... Oh, October, I'm going to be at a LuxCon, which is it's a collection of all awesome fantasy... artwork.
Oh, cool.
It's like a gallery show.
Like a fantasy convention.
Wedding. Yeah, it's amazing. The Vallejo is there. Like, it's really cool. There's some amazing artwork there to go and see. And then I think there's something either in, can't remember if it's Utah or Colorado. At the beginning of November, and then I think in the middle of November, I'm going overseas for something, possibly in January as well.
Okay.
So there's a whole lot of stuff, but my refrigerator tells me what I'm doing. it's all on there on a calendar.
Okay.
So
for those who can't make it to the Baltimore event, there's plenty other events that they can catch you.
Yeah, there will be plenty others.
Okay.
And I'm horrible about posting stuff. I really I'm jealous of like every time I see Jeff, like he'll put up his schedule. Like, oh, that's the best idea ever, and then I like doo-dee-doo.
Uh-huh.
And I'm off painting or something and forget.
Well, if you want to send me any of your schedule information, I would love to put it on the show notes area just to show people, you know, upcoming events.
Yeah, I would love to. That will also make me write it down in another place that is not my bridge. Which would be probably brilliant, right?
We'll see what we can get out of you. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me. Is there any last thoughts or any last shout outs, any last plugs that you want to do for yourself? Talk about where people can find you, your website, any channels.
I am easily found on Facebook and Instagram, and then it's under Drew Tucker Artist. And then my website is Drew Tucker Illustration that's my email at gmail.com, right? The longest email you could possibly have. And then also the webpage is the same thing, Drew Tucker Illustration .com. And then, you know, there's a lot of art, prints, proofs are up there. And I keep on, you know, t-shirts, stuff like that, and different design things. And I, you know, pretty much can get, I can be getting a hold through, you know, set email or, you know, through my website or, you know, message me, any of those. Okay.
And I'll put those in the, of course, in the description down in the show notes, just so people have something that they can click on to reach out. Okay. Any last thoughts or any other things you want to share with the listeners out there?
No. I think I'm okay, but I think this is really amazing. I love the fan support and everything for sorcery is so cool. Let alone sorcery itself. You know, Eric and all those guys, how well they treat their artists. It's a really nice community to be working in. It's really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
It's really cool to see Eric's Curiosa give so much love to the artists and support for the artists. And
That's amazing. I mean, you know, every company loves their artists, but Eric Curiosa really loves their artists. It's really nice.
Are there, last question here, I'm fitting one more in. Are there any pieces that Eric himself wanted for himself that he owns that are your originals?
He has Pendulum of Power. I think he has Belfry. He's got another one too, and I can't remember which one. It is. But yeah, he has a couple as well.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, he seems to be a big collector and supporter of these artists.
Yeah, he's a big collector. And then, you know, like how many of us artists are there?
Yeah.
Like, and he's got, you know, it was in the contract that he would get like first on, you know, a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty cool. So, you know, he's got something from all of us, which is really neat. So he's got to be a big collector because there's a whole bunch of them.
I'm sure walking through his gallery or his home or wherever all these pieces are hanging out would be such a fun, crazy experience to just see all these original pieces.
Oh, I know. It would be really cool to see.
Well, again, thank you so much, Drew. We went on quite a bit longer than we anticipated. You're just such an easy guy to talk to and such a fun guy to have discussions and conversations with. And I already know that I could sit and you know, over a beer, talk with you for hours over all these things. So I'm very excited to meet you over there in Baltimore.
That's going to be awesome. Let's have a beer and like
I would love that. Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you having your podcast debut with me today to talk about, you know, everything in your career and giving listeners a little bit of an insight into the mind of Drew Tucker. And
sorry about that.
No, we love it. I mean, it's so cool to get to know the artist behind the work. Like you said, it's Sorcery is putting such an emphasis on this art in a way that makes you want to know the artists and the life of the artists and the mindset of the artists. And so it's really cool to just get this opportunity to sit down with you.
I think it's amazing even for us to even get that
recognition.
I mean, that notoriety or anything or that. Yeah, that recognition. I feel real fortunate. At all degrees to this.
I'm definitely excited to meet you in person and like I said, just have a beer with you. I'm gonna try to bring a nice wad of cash because there's a few things I want to get from you while I'm there.
I encourage that. do it.
buy my stuff.
Yeah, buy my stuff.
I'm very excited to meet you in person, man. So thank you so much for taking your time and being part of this podcast. And
thanks for having me. You're really easy to talk to. So
well, I look forward to possibly in the future maybe having a follow up. Like I said, after Arthurian Legends,
would be really cool. That would be awesome. And I hope there's not too much you gotta edit out.
I mean, most of this stuff was just so fun to listen to. So I'm gonna be very minimal on the editing, and people are just gonna have to deal with it being 2 hours.
Okay, well,
lucky you didn't push. Lucky you didn't push record in the beginning when we were just kind of shooting a little bit here back
and forth. Yeah, that was fun too.
Well, great talking to you. I'm gonna bring it to a close here. Again, thank you so much. Make sure all you listeners catch Drew Tucker there at the Sorcery Spring social event hosting the Courtesan Cup coming up here in June over there in Baltimore. Again, thank you so much, Drew, and we'll see you there.
All right. See you later, Kevin. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later. And if you want to shoot me an email, follow up or vice versa, I think there's some stuff that I gotta send you. But you rule. So thank you so much, man. All
right. Thank you, man.
And I'll talk to you later. I'm going to make some food because I'm kind of hungry. I also want coffee because I've got a coffee problem.
Well, I'm gonna hit end here in a second, but that doesn't mean we got to directly in the conversation. But
I will leave the machine on.
But all right, I'm gonna bring it to a close here. So thank you again so much. And I had a fantastic time.
All right, me as well. Thank you.
So I hope you all enjoyed getting a little look into the life and career of Drew Tucker. And hopefully we get another interview with Drew after the Arthurian Legends launch so we can discuss some of these really cool cards that he's super excited about in the next set. So yeah, moving on, we're going to finish up the episode, as always, with the card highlights section of the podcast. So the very first card that we're going to discuss is Scarecrow. Scarecrow is a 2-mana ordinary relic with a Genesis ability that says return each airborne minion here to its owner's hand. Airborne minions can't enter this location. So this is an artifact, it is a relic with a Genesis ability, and you basically bounce whatever airborne minions are at the location that it's summoned back to the owner's hand, and you prevent airborne minions from entering the location that this artifact is at, which is really flavorfully fitting for this artifact because it is a Scarecrow. And so the fact that it kind of scares away airborne minions and they can't enter that location is very fitting for what this theme of the card is going for. So really cool flavor for this card. All right, so next up we have Wayfaring Pilgrim. Wayfaring Pilgrim is a 2-mana, 1-fire threshold, 1-power, exceptional mortal, and it says whenever Wayfaring Pilgrim enters each corner of the realm for the first time, you may draw a card. Now, this card is cool for a few reasons. One, it was included in the pre-con decks as a creative way to do card draw in the fire element. It's also a mortal, but more importantly, this is a card that keeps track of something that is more of just this passive static ability. So each pilgrim on its own will keep track of the corners that it has visited. So if you cast another pilgrim out, that pilgrim will be its own separate pilgrim and will be able to visit the corners independently on its own. Now, keep in mind, it is talking about the actual corners of the realm itself. If you're using a 2-player playmat that has the numbers, these spaces would be 1, 5, 16, and 20. Those are going to be the corners. And this counts whether or not you move the pilgrim there, you cast the pilgrim there, however you get the pilgrim to visit those corners. Every time it visits a new corner that it hasn't visited before, you get to draw a card. So it kind of makes you work for that card draw a little bit, but again, in fire, it is a fun way of utilizing a minion to get some card draw out of that, and you can draw up to 4 cards with this card. All right, and last but not least, the last card we're going to discuss is Pristine Paradise. Pristine Paradise is a unique site, and it is one of each threshold on here. So it has an earth, fire, water, and air threshold. And it says provides no mana or threshold unless completely empty, and has very gorgeous artwork by Marta Molina. So we've discussed this site in a couple episodes now. This is one of the only 2 4-element sites that we have, the other being Color Out of Space. You cannot have anything on this site. You cannot have a minion. You cannot have an artifact. You can't even have an aura. Anything is on this site. It does not provide mana or threshold. So it just becomes an empty site. So you have to be very careful with this site. If you're using this in your deck, it's very often targeted by the opponent to try to get something over there to turn it off. Either way, it's a very beautiful site, very beautiful artwork. I personally love this card and I have it in foil just because it's so gorgeous. All right, but with that is the end of the episode. I just want to apologize for how long this episode probably is. We had a lot of announcements. Me and Drew talked for quite a while. But again, thank you so much for listening. I just want to give a huge shout out to the community, especially on Discord, and to all the listeners who listen to the podcast, support the podcast, whether you're on Discord or not. And I want to give a huge shout out to Ron from Sorcery Social Club for making this interview happen, and a huge shout out to Drew Tucker himself for sitting down with me and letting me interview him and talk about all this fun stuff we talked about. So I just want to remind everybody to be kind to one another, and last but not least, stay contested. Until next time.